Good afternoon and happy new year, and welcome to Chemical World. I am Kenna Crampton, joined in studio with Mugsy Faye.
Hey, 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 happy 2026, y'all, and welcome to Chemical World. We've got some few kind of exciting things to kick off our new year, which I would love to start 2026 with some positive news and some positive affirmations, because we all know that 2025 started off rough and it just kept coming.
Yeah. 2026 has been pretty strange too, with the January 3rd. Whatever.
So
let's get on with the good news, because we don't need to talk about
And I will just say, I was listening to a podcast on New Year's Eve, and it was an astrologer, and she was talking about the beginning of the Palisade fires out in LA at the beginning of 2025. And, you know, my family is from LA, and a lot of me and my partner's families were displaced through those fires. So it was very emotional, and that was kind of an intense reminder. And then it was kind of nice to bring in 2026 with a lot of rain across the western U.S. Of course, we wish it was snow, but I would rather see torrential flooding than more homes burning. So we're already off to a slightly better start. Knocking on all the wood I can find. I would love to dig right into it if you're ready.
Yeah, go for it.
So I have one piece of actually really exciting federal news, probably the only real diamond in the rough. We're not going to get into it. Obviously, there's some really awful things happening at the federal level that have been happening since last January. But one executive order that is a little bit in our favor is the rescheduling of cannabis.
Oh, shoot. I didn't hear about that. Okay, cool. Because I'd heard about a rescheduling of something else, but that was probably something else completely entirely.
Well, and if you're a relatively new listener to Chemical World, I will remind y'all that I choose to use the term cannabis because marijuana is a racialized word to describe cannabis that was really utilized to connect it with Latin American immigrants as part of the criminalization of cannabis that happened in the 20th century. So weed, pot, marijuana, whatever, but I'm going to call it cannabis. So just wanted to clarify that. But of course, at the federal level, they continue to use the term marijuana. But the president did sign an executive order in December. Basically, I was trying to look this up this morning to figure out what is actually happening. Where is the movement with this? But the executive order is to reschedule cannabis from a Schedule 1 drug to a Schedule 3 drug, which is very exciting and a huge step forward. Not true decriminalization on the federal level, but a huge step forward in drug policy. I mean, the entire scheduling system really needs to go away.
Yeah, and just a quick reminder, what kind of drugs are Schedule 1? Like heroin and cocaine, right? And then,
Yeah, so to start, I think the best way is to...
Again, you just said, it doesn't... The scheduling shouldn't be there, but since it is...
Right, yeah.
So we all understand.
For sure. So to clarify, there are five classes in the United States drug scheduling system that was created in the 1960s. And Schedule 1 drugs are defined as the most dangerous and addictive drugs that have no medical use and basically have the highest potential of addiction and issues of that nature. So in Schedule 1, we have LSD and peyote, which are not addictive drugs at all. They are drugs that open your mind and make you question what's going on around
you. And conformity.
Yeah. Cannabis is technically still a Schedule 1 drug. Again, this is a classification for the most dangerous, lethal, and addictive drugs out there. And you have cannabis, LSD, and peyote. Yes, heroin is also a class 1 substance, which makes no sense whatsoever because heroin was absolutely used in medicine until we were able to synthesize it into drugs like morphine and fentanyl, which are Schedule 3 because they are commonly used in medicine. I think cocaine is maybe Schedule 2. I mean, also a drug that was routinely used in medicine until it was synthesized and we found better means, right? Hmm. Also, we basically just switched from laudanum and cocaine-filled Coca-Cola to nicotine, caffeine, and alcohol. We are a very drug-dependent culture, but we've kind of shifted the way we up and down ourselves a little bit. So
I do feel like nicotine and caffeine are probably a little more safe than laudanum and cocaine, but you know, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe not. I don't know.
Well, you know, I mean, not 100% safe drugs to be certain, but yes, like better regulation, drugs are a little bit safer now, right? And that's the whole idea, is we have found safer ways to basically do the same things. And you know, fentanyl, this confuses people all the time. Fentanyl is commonly used in medicine and it is really a miracle drug. So recently I took a friend of ours to the emergency room and watched them get fentanyl while they were in the ER. And then about 20 minutes later, they made a joke like, oh, I'm going to be all high on fentanyl going out of here. And the nurse said, no, you're not. It's already out of your system. Mm-hmm. Fentanyl is so fast acting that it's great for acute surgical care and emergency care. And then it just wears right off. And worst case scenario, we have to give you Narcan or naloxone to get that out of your system. So you know, the scheduling system is fascinating and probably a little archaic and outdated, as I would argue many of our governmental pieces of paperwork are. Anywho, but the thing that really hurts us as a society, as a medical society, whatever, when a drug is Schedule One, we can't study it at all because it is so illegal, right? It's been declared it has no medical uses. It has no benefits to society. So you're not even allowed to study it. So this has been a huge issue with medical cannabis because even government agencies cannot study the actual medical effects of cannabis. Mm-hmm. And so if you look this up, this is exactly why Trump and the federal government are pushing for this change so that we can study cannabis more and actually understand how it works and what medical benefits it may have. Because right now at the federal level, we can't even study it. And so we continue to have very limited understanding of how cannabis works. Now, we've been using cannabis medically for decades, specifically to treat end-of-life conditions like cancer and HIV and symptoms associated with chemotherapy and all of these things, right? There's also been a lot of information out there about cannabis helping with conditions like glaucoma. Mm-hmm. But I've read like really mixed.
I remember that from Half Baked.
Well, I read a magazine in an eye doctor office one time that said the amount of weed you would have to smoke to help, because what it is, it's that pressure on your eyes that causes glaucoma. So to relieve that pressure, you would have to smoke like, it was an insane amount. It was like 20 joints a day or something, which might not sound that crazy to some of you out there, but it was like the argument was that you could not actually even consume enough cannabis to get that benefit. So it's hard because I think that some of the medical benefits of cannabis have been kind of like overrated or widely touted, but we don't actually have a lot of scientific evidence to back that up. So, you know, if you'd asked me 20 years ago if we would see federal decriminalization of cannabis in our lifetimes, I would say probably not. But at this point, with this administration, I mean, I think that if anything, this is a sign that there are certain things, just like Biden building the wall, that will happen regardless of the administration. There are certain wheels that get set into motion.
And is probably on such a like, on one, like, if it is coming across the president's mind at all, it's probably in just the way that, like, if they legalize cannabis federally, that's going to be a lot of money
influx.
And so that's probably the only thing that's gone through his mind in terms of, you know, so like that, which is a good thing because, like, it is an untapped tax market, or it's like we could be making money off of this. And like, and it is like, and it is so amazing that it's, now we'll be able to study it. I'm curious. That's what happened with psilocybin, right? Psilocybin was a Schedule One, and then they brought it to like a Schedule something else just within the last like 5 years or whatever. And that's why they've been studying it more. Is that true? Or am I?
You know, that's a good question. I'm going to look it up right now because I don't know the exact answer to that question. But what I will tell you off the top of my head is that you know, this gets so complicated. We here in Colorado, right, we decriminalized plant medicine the same way that in 2012 we decriminalized cannabis. much similar to even years before that, like the Denver police made it the dollar fine for cannabis, which you still see. I was actually just watching something the other day that I want to say Kansas or maybe it was Missouri has that rule now too, which like that was enacted in Colorado a long, long time ago. But now we see other even more conservative states.
It's not Missouri because I literally just looked up Missouri the other day because I'm going there next month. And I was like, is it legal in Missouri? Do I need a...
Yeah, so just looked it up, and psilocybin, along with peyote and LSD and most hallucinogens, is still federally classified as Schedule One, meaning that we, on the federal level, are not studying psilocybin, meaning that, you know, any Colorado researchers who are working on this run the risk of, you know, federal charges. I know that Colorado Colorado Mesa University out of Grand Junction has been doing a lot of studying on cannabis too over the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, which has been really interesting to see. There was one funny study they did where if you smoke weed every day, you are more likely to get a better grade than somebody who smokes weed periodically. And it was just an interesting study because it's like, oh, because you're basically like always at that mindset. But if you don't smoke, like, it's going to really mess you up.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, my experience.
Yeah, you know,
like,
tolerance.
Even if, like, I just wait until later on in the day, you know, and I'll feel it more, you know, differently. But
oh, for sure.
Okay. Well, that's good to know about the psilocybin, because I was kind of like, that's crazy that LSD is Schedule One and psilocybin isn't. And that's only just because of like my own personal like history with both psilocybin and LSD. Like, because as a younger person, when I was consuming psilocybin, we would consume an insane amount. And like now looking back, I'm like, why were we consuming that much at a time? And so I would be pretty scared of psilocybin and felt a lot safer with LSD because it was so much more regulated. And now I just understand I just don't have to eat that much psilocybin. But I still think, I still agree with the fact that like, unless you've eaten those mushrooms before and unless you have, you know, have it been sent out and know exactly how much you're taking and whatever, it's still the same with LSD where it's like, it's more regulated. Like you take half a hit, you know what you're going to get. It's not going to be crazy. Whereas like you take half a gram, you still might go, might be a lot of psilocybin, you know? So anyway, I don't know if that was a tangent that needed to go on, but no, it's just crazy to me.
Yeah. And I appreciated that. And yeah, so good to know too, to remind ourselves that psilocybin is technically a Schedule One, but here in Colorado, things are a little bit different. I just pulled up the whole scheduling system because I was curious about a couple things. Because I was going to say, you know, yes, psilocybin is still Schedule One, but if you see all of that movement over time of, you know, the drug reform that Colorado did around cannabis, and now less than 20 years later, only a little over 10 years from cannabis decriminalization in Colorado and Washington, now we're starting to see the scheduling change. This is really positive, you know, and
definitely.
In Colorado, part of why we decriminalize plant medicine is because we know and we're seeing this evidence that psilocybin, MDMA, and ketamine can be really effective at treating behavioral health conditions like PTSD, you know, ketamine.
And depression.
Yeah, PTSD, depression, anxiety, all of these things. And, you know, from my understanding, which this gets a little bit more into the weeds, but ketamine is probably the least effective of those three in the way that it works in your brain.
I was wondering that, sorry.
Well, it's I do think that the fact that it paralyzes you is a benefit because it can, it's really hard to sit still through a psilocybin or an MDMA trip, but that's really where you get that benefit of an actual like therapeutic large dose. I, you know, I had a doctor tell me the other day, and this was agreeing with something I already knew to be true, but you know, a microdose of psilocybin can help you feel better, but it's not going to help you actually change those brain waves that are carved in generally to be negative or to be depressed or to be anxious. But when you macro dose in a therapeutic setting with a shaman or a supervisor, provider, whatever that looks like, that's when you really are able to change those grooves. That's when you're able to quit smoking because you just had a therapeutic psilocybin trip or whatever the case may be. But ketamine has been so much more in vogue. And of course, you know, some recent things in our communities have shown that being paralyzed also creates a lot of risks for the patient. But ketamine has been so in vogue because it's a Schedule III drug, because it's used still specifically in veterinary medicine, but it's still used as an anesthetic, right? And again, we've just developed better, safer anesthetics than ketamine, but it is still Schedule III. And so it's been really easy for providers, anesthesiologists, to then go and provide ketamine treatment. Interestingly enough, MDMA, psilocybin, cannabis, all Schedule I.
Yeah, and again, and again, and before that, before the scheduling system, therapists were using MDMA and successfully, especially in couples therapy. I mean, and it's just so frustrating, and it really, I mean, it's so hard to not just be like, yeah, it's because it opens your mind and doesn't and helps you feel not conform, which is exactly what they need and want. And
yeah.
I mean, it's, I don't want to go on too much of a tangent with that, but oh, shoot. No, I forgot what I was going
to
say.
It just allows you to be so much more pro-social. And so with drugs like psilocybin and MDMA, the whole idea is that you're able to face these traumatic things or these problems in your relationship or whatever from a more positive viewpoint, you know?
Yeah.
And I looked that up because it does, it is really confusing and complicated, right? Because MDMA, they have been doing clinical trials for the FDA in Boulder for like 10 years now on MDMA. How are they doing that research? And granted, the FDA keeps shooting them down, but how are they even doing this research, right? If MDMA is Schedule I, but they're doing it under the supervision of the FDA. It's very confusing.
Huh. Yeah. I was one thing that I've heard about, like with the macro dosing, there was a story of this man that it was like 10 years after he'd macro dosed and he didn't have any relapse of depression. You know, that's just one story that I heard off the Science Versus podcast, and they did one about psilocybin and just the benefits. And one thing that I've heard doctors say too, just an easy way to explain it, is it's as if you're walking on a ground and there's all these holes that you have to always avoid. And when you take psilocybin, it just evens everything out and brings it all onto one plane so you can actually see everything. It's like when you're in the trenches, you know, like they always say that when you're in the trenches, you can't see it. And it's like, I was always like, kind of, I was a little confused by that at one point. But then I realized, yeah, when you're struggling so much, you can't see your life and what's good about it or what's happening because you're just trying to survive and you just got to like eat and keep going, sleep and keep going, you know? And so you don't, you're in the trenches. You don't see it because you're down below. It's just like, yeah, it evens the playing field out so you can see your life in a way that you can't see it in this realm.
Yeah, I love that analogy because I tend to think about my life and my struggles as like I'm in the bottom of a well and like somebody throws a rope down or something, but it's like until that person threw the rope down, I couldn't even see that it was open up above me. Like I was still looking down. I don't know, I'll have to work on the analogy to figure out what it was I was focusing on in the well, but I love that, that it's like you can't even see the opening, you can't even see the light because you're so focused on like that survival.
I mean, and that like just makes me think so much of quitting drinking, you know, like when I quit, like as even like a year out, it was all of a sudden like, whoa, like I just had never looked at life in that way before. Like life had always been just thinking about the next drink for so long, you know, and like, well, how am I going to avoid having the next drink? How am I going to get through till two? Whatever the, you know, struggle was at the time, and like just how much brain power was opened up for me when I quit drinking and I didn't have to think about it anymore. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, even for folks who aren't necessarily interested in long-term sobriety, something like Dry January or even just a day or two, just like having that break to shift that perspective. I mean, from anything, from cannabis, from alcohol, whatever the case may be, I think it's really healthy to take those tolerance breaks or whatever from time to time, regardless, just to like have that varied perspective. But you know, I'm somebody who's always interested in learning and growing, and the reality is that that's actually not where not where everybody is at. So
yeah,
I think that's interesting too, like to really dig into the fact that, like, I really value knowledge and education, and that's not a value to everybody, you know? So some people are happy to keep digging in the well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and yeah, it's...
But they could be happier.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, not that I'm promoting it, but, you know, psilocybin, LSD, and MDMA are some ways to have some fun.
Absolutely. Though I do encourage that you test your drugs if they're in a powder
and
or crystal form.
And always have Narcan, even if you've tested. It's always, I think it's always important to remind people that even if you've tested your drugs, you still need to have that Narcan in order to be 100% safe from opiates.
And experimenting with drugs is all well and good, but I mean, look at drugs like SSRIs, for example, commonly used to treat depression, but they are shown to really only be effective when they are in collaboration with therapeutic services. Mm-hmm. So drugs are great, drugs are fun, drugs can be dangerous, but to get true therapeutic benefit from a drug like MDMA or psilocybin or even SSRIs or, you know, whatever, it really is beneficial to have a guided professional and a guided professional that you resonate with, right? And somebody you feel like is going to have your back in your care and in your treatment. And that's not always easy.
And I've never had the experience of, like, macro dosing with therapeutic assistance. I really would like to, and I think it would be really helpful and beneficial. But I do know that there was a time when I used to get together with all my ladies, and we would almost always microdose a little bit, and it would be about once a month, and that would almost always, like, help bring me back and, like, just back to, like, what's important in life, which is connection and nature and love. So I don't know. I always thought that was funny. I was like, I'm not technically doing it therapeutically, but it definitely is therapeutic the way that I'm taking it. But I still would really be interested because, I mean, we were talking before we got on mic, like, depression is such a, it's so up and down. And so, like, hearing that someone went 10 years without even a relapse of depression is crazy, but they were also a man, so they don't have their hormones.
They don't know.
We were talking about how, you know, your cycle can affect that. And I feel like that'll probably always be that one day of every 28 days that I'll feel depressed. But who knows? I don't know.
That makes me think, though, that we probably don't have as solid of an understanding of the way that testosterone fluxes for men because there's not as much physical evidence. Like, they're not bleeding once a month. And, you know, I think, and I've said it before, that sometimes I think some of our behavioral health issues as a culture are a little bit more worse for men because they don't have that, you know, culturally accepted outlet. They're not allowed to cry or whatever. And so it's just interesting, like, one of those things. I mean, this is how we were with women's health for centuries. It's like, oh, we never really thought about that. We just thought your organs were roaming around or whatever, right? So it's just interesting how now we put so much focus on women's health, which is great, but sometimes it's like, I mean, men have their own stuff, right? They have their own cycles and their own hormones, and every individual is different. And so everyone has a different balance of testosterone and estrogen and all these things. So anyway.
Well, and their fluctuation, I think, is more of like ours is daily and theirs is more like monthly or something. Yeah. But yeah, anyway.
We don't know. Maybe if you put it as a class 3.
Yeah.
Well, and I just wanted to kind of summarize that conversation by saying, you know, we do have more options than ever before for local providers that will work with you using psilocybin and or MDMA. So if you're looking for that kind of care, the legality is still a little gray here in Colorado, but you can shoot me an email at mugsy@highrockiesharmreduction.com. Or you can, you know, DM me or text me or whatever. You can find more info at highrockiesharmreduction.com. And I'm always happy to make community referrals and connect you with some pretty stellar providers that we have here in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond.
Awesome. Okay. Sorry. And well, that's really exciting. Did you have any other news? I mean, we are at the end, but
I have a couple quick updates. I'll try to make them real quick. First and foremost, High Rockies Harm Reduction, we are taking a little like pause from services while we build out our new vehicles. So we will not be having our regularly scheduled tabling services until March. And so, of course, it's going to be like a beautiful, snow-free, sunny winter. But we do have options to get you supplies supplies by mail-based delivery or appointment or at-home drop-off, whatever you feel comfortable with. I will have a new actual like form to fill out if you're interested in supply delivery or appointments on our website sometime this month. But you can, again, email me, call me, text me, DM me, whatever communication route is most comfortable for you. We want to do whatever we can to get you these supplies. You can also always get free naloxone from Garfield County Public Libraries, Pickens County Libraries, Lake County Libraries, and your public health offices. And there was one more thing. Oh, and we'll be back in March with some really cool built-out service vehicles, and our services will be better, easier, more anonymous and private than ever. Awesome. And then, so that's exciting. I was saying before we got on that I hate to pause services, but that's just the reality. And generally speaking, January, February makes the most sense to pause our services. So I'm really hoping that it's snowing by the time you're hearing this. The only other thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, we've said it before, but Narcan is just one brand of naloxone hydrochloride. There's other brands out there, Kloxxado, Revive, that are just naloxone hydrochloride. All of these will reverse an opioid overdose when administered in a timely manner. But something that's kind of exciting is we have been getting our Narcan from the state for free for about 5 years. And we had been kind of wondering why the state was choosing to send us a branded naloxone that we know is about $7 more expensive per kit when there are just generic naloxones out there. So I'm really excited that the state is now sending us generic naloxone, which saves us money. It saves the state money. It saves, well, I would say the taxpayer, but it's more like it's saving the Sacklers from their, well, they're not saving money, but we're saving money with the Sackler money that we have gotten as a state and a county and a region. But just, I wanted to give you the warning that the Narcan boxes that you will start seeing more commonly will be not branded. They will just say naloxone. They'll be purple. They'll be pretty different looking than the old boxes, but they will still have pictures, step-by-step instructions, and two nasal sprays in every box. So remember, whatever naloxone brand you have, please use it. It is good up to 20 years past expiration. You are protected from any civil and criminal liability. And if you don't know what somebody took, chances are they don't know either. So just give them the Narcan. You can't hurt them. I'm sorry, the naloxone. Give them the generic naloxone.
Awesome. Well, thanks for all of the really great news and information. And we'll be back in February, February 9th at 4 p.m. And if you'd like to listen to past episodes of Chemical World, you can go to kdnk.org. You may donate there as well. Get the beginning of the year donations out of the way. And remember, you don't have to be sober
to keep your community clean. Have a safe and happy winter, y'all.
I am a chemical girl.